Hello, and welcome back to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. If this is your first time listening, or if you haven't done so already, be sure to hit the subscribe button for instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Instagram or Facebook at Words of the Wise Podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W Podcast as well. Joining us today for episode number 15 is the legendary coach, Dick Delahan. As I had several people suggest I do an interview with him, let's just say he definitely did not disappoint. Get ready for some quality coaching on the game of life. Here is episode 15, Dick Delahan.
My name is Richard Delahan, and I'm 76 years old, and I'm currently retired and living in the Villages, Florida, and I'm happy to do this podcast with Lexi Maron, who is the granddaughter of one of my favorite players that I ever coached, and that was Bill Lynch.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us and agreeing to do this. So, you grew up in Indianapolis. What was Indianapolis like when you were growing up?
Well, Indianapolis was obviously much smaller, and I grew up at St. Lawrence Grade School at 46th and Highway 100, Shadeland Avenue, and I was the oldest of nine children. And Indianapolis, my mother didn't drive. We had one car in the family. We didn't go very many places, and back in the day, no one really ate out at restaurants very often. We pretty much were just with other kids in the neighborhood, and my mother was obviously very busy just putting food on the table. And so Indianapolis, I never really got around Indianapolis very much. I didn't really know what it was like, except for traveling around and playing baseball games in various parts of the cities. Indianapolis was obviously very different than it is today.
Mm-hmm. So what did the typical day in your childhood look like?
I was always playing. I was playing football. I was playing baseball. I was playing basketball. As soon as I got my homework done, I was out playing. I had a good friend by the name of Jim Hafner who lived up the street on Dean Street. I lived on 4657 North David Street over in Lawrence Township, and we all went to St. Lawrence Grade School. So as soon as we got out of school, we went to Jim's house. We did the list of chores that his mother had left because he and his mother and his father both worked. And then as soon as we got the chores done, we were playing. We were out, and I mean, we were running the neighborhood and playing. That was a typical day.
Yeah. You were the oldest of nine kids, you said, correct?
Correct.
What did growing up in a big family teach you?
Well, I think it taught you how to relate to people, to each other, because you learned how to treat your siblings. And because I was the oldest, I didn't realize it at the time, but I needed to be a good example to the rest of my brothers and sisters. And all of them went to college, all of them graduated from college, and all of them, like five of them, have master's degrees.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know that I really take much credit for that, but I was very fortunate to get a scholarship to play football and baseball in college, and I wound up going to college primarily just because somebody offered me the opportunity to go to college, and that was at Butler University. And my brothers and sisters, all of them went to different schools. Back in the day, going to college was kind of a dream for all of us, because obviously with nine children, you're not going to be in a very, very wealthy family.
Yeah.
So you just went with the opportunities that God gave us, and God was very good to my family.
Yeah. So what would you say is your favorite childhood memory?
That's very difficult to say. My father always used to make it possible. Joe Deslin was the head football coach at Cathedral High School when I was an eighth grader playing CYO football at St. Lawrence Grade School. Mm-hmm. And we had played Holy Trinity, and that's where Joe Deslin's son, Joe Deslin, or Butch as we called him, they played us. Holy Trinity played St. Lawrence, and I was a running back, and I was fairly quick. And so Joe Deslin called my house and told my dad he wanted to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he told me I ought to come to Cathedral and play football for Cathedral. Well, I was really little,
yeah,
but I was quick. And so I got an opportunity to go to Cathedral. Now, it was 11 or 12 miles from where I lived. And fortunately, there was an upperclassman by the name of Ron Doxey, who was an offensive lineman a couple of years ahead of me. He was driving a His dad owned the Dairy Queen in Pendleton Pike way back in the day, and his dad bought him an Impala Chevrolet. I forget the year, but it was probably a 1960 Chevrolet Impala. It was beautiful, brand new, and he used to pick me and a couple of my buddies up on the street corner and take us to Cathedral. He made it possible for me to go to Cathedral. I graduated from Cathedral, and Father Jim Higgins was the superintendent or principal of the school at that time. And he was a tremendous priest and a very inspirational guy. And he later offered me my first job at Chittard, having gone to Cathedral and been there when Father Higgins was the principal.
Oh, wow. So what was the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
Well, how to treat other people is a lesson that my mother was a saint, and she was fantastic at teaching her children how to treat each other and how to treat other people and how to treat other adults and the concept of respect. And my father was a very, very honest man and very sincere. He was very busy, but when he spoke to you, you were inclined to listen. And we just learned from our parents that loving each other in your family is so very, very important. It rubs off because you then learn how to treat other people. You know, my future turned out to be in the coaching profession, which it's the people business. And learning to love your fellow man and love your creator and the lessons that Christianity teaches, it was very prevalent in my family.
Did you have a job when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. I was about 11 years old, and I got a paper route. I carried papers on two or three streets, David Street, Dean Street, and Karen Drive. And I had like 32 daily customers, and I had like 40 Sunday customers. And it was a Morning Star, Indianapolis Star, delivered by 6 o'clock every day of the week except Sunday, and you had till 7 o'clock to get it delivered. And, of course, when I started, I was 11 years old. I was so small that I couldn't even carry the papers. And I remember my father on Sundays would get up and put my papers on the back end of the car, and I would run back and forth from the houses to the car and deliver the papers. The other days, of course, I had a paper sack with papers in the front, papers in the back, and I would deliver papers to the three streets in my neighborhood there, and then, of course, come back home and eat breakfast and go to school. Wow. That was my first job. My second job was at Hillcrest Country Club at caddying for golfers, and I caddied for the pastor of my church at St. Lawrence Church. Father Conan played golf with Father Harold from St. Andrews, and I used to caddy for Father Conan when I was a young pup there for a couple of years. And then when I was going into the freshman year, the Hillcrest Country Club concession stand manager asked me if I wanted to work the concession stand. I worked the concession stand, which it serviced the pool and it serviced the golfers on the outside of the concession stand. So we had two sides, and one side would serve the pool participants, and the other side would serve the golfers. Anyway, I did that. I'll never forget it. This funny story. I came home and I had my first check from, and I showed it to my mother. And I had worked, I believe I had worked 31 hours, and my first check was I'd gotten paid $0.85 an hour. So I think it was $28.
Oh my God.
And so I made more money caddying for various golfers the year before than I did in my first week. And my mother said, "Well, now you told them that you were going to work the concession stand, so you got to see it through." Well, the next 6 or 8 weeks, I worked the concession stand for $0.85 an hour. And oh my goodness, I just couldn't understand how I get paid $0.85 an hour when I was probably making $1.50 to $2 an hour.
Yeah.
Caddying, because of course you had a caddy rate, and then you got tips on top of it from the golfers. Anyway, that was my first job, and then the second job, I was a hot carrier for a man named Tom Davidson, who had a masonry contracting business, and I helped build the three-story apartment building mm-hmm. on 10th and Shadeland Avenue. I'll never forget it. I used to hitchhike down Shadeland to get there, and then I'd carry brick and mortar up scaffolding and all that stuff. And I'm so little. I mean, the hod was weighed more than I did, and I'll never forget it. It really was a learning experience. And the masonry contractors would cuss and swear and raise hell with the hod carriers and raise hell with all the different people and stuff and fight among themselves verbally. Well, anyway, I went home and I told my mother, I said, Mom, I said, I am not going to do this kind of work the rest of my life. I said, I'm going to college and I am going to do something different. Because I couldn't understand how they could swear at each other and cuss at each other and swear at me. And it was ugly. But it did teach me a valuable lesson. And I wanted to do a good job because I wanted them to realize that I was willing to work hard and do whatever was expected of me. My mom and my dad both taught me how to work. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the most valuable lesson I can say about every one of my brothers and sisters, all nine of them. They're all workers. Mm-hmm. And none of them ever, you would see, they would have no grass growing under their feet because they always knew how to work and they learned how to work because we had to. We expected to work as soon as we were able.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about your job when you were growing up. What did the typical Saturday night when you were in high school look like for you?
There was nothing. I'd play messing around with buddies, at their house. I mean, I remember I had a buddy up the street. His name was Charlie Pogue, and he had a Monopoly game. Mm-hmm. And we used to play Monopoly. and we played Monopoly a lot. And I'll never forget it because it was a real contest. I mean, hours, and we played Monopoly. And then a euchre came out. And he learned how to play euchre, and he taught us how to play euchre. And we probably played more euchre on Saturday night than anything else.
Yeah.
Euchre and Monopoly.
So you went to Cathedral, and did you only play football and baseball there, or did you do any other sports?
Well, I started out as a freshman, and I was going to go out for basketball. So I went out for basketball, and I was too short, not very good at playing basketball. So I got cut from the basketball team, but as soon as I got cut, the football coach said, you need to go to wrestling. So he sent me to the wrestling room, and I'd wrestled for Leo Mahoney at Cathedral High School. And Leo Mahoney was a tough sucker. He was a really tough football coach and wrestling coach, and he was a physical guy, and he was big, and he was strong, and he was intimidating, and yet he was a really good coach, very good coach. And so I wrestled for 2 years, but I got really sick in the middle of my sophomore year in wrestling with my sinus infections and ear infections, and I really had trouble. And so that winter, I got so sick that I missed about 2 weeks of school during wrestling season, and I never wrestled after that. I played football and played baseball all 4 years. And my baseball coach was a guy named Tom O'Brien, who's still a substitute teacher at Cathedral High School today. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. He taught me how to coach. He taught me how to treat players. He loved me. He put his arm around me when I was lowered whale doo-doo under the ocean. I was 0 for 17, my first 17 at bats as a sophomore third baseman on the varsity baseball team. And I was lower than whale doo-doo under the ocean. And he put his arm around me and he said, little man, he said, it'll be okay. He said, just hang in there. Just keep doing what you're doing. Your hits will come. And don't get so upset. Don't get so down on yourself, because I was really down on myself. But he just taught me coach. He taught me how to love your players into submission to what the coaches want you to do and want you to chase and want you to pursue. It was a sincere love. He was fun to play for. And of course I played football. He was also a football coach. He was one of our football coaches. And even though I was really, really small, I was a running back, and I was quick, and I was able to, eventually I got to play. I didn't hardly get to play much as a freshman. I didn't play much as a sophomore. Played a little bit as a junior at Cathedral. Gave me a gift of a varsity letter that year. I really probably didn't deserve it. But then my senior year, I fortunately was able to get the starting position after this first game, and the rest is history, because I never would have gone to college had it not been for football and baseball. They gave me a football, half baseball. Well, that was a combination. Half football, half baseball was half my tuition. The other half of my tuition was my academic record in high school. I was a really good student in high school, so I got a half tuition scholarship at Butler for academics. So really very fortunate.
Yeah. Obviously, you ended up choosing Butler. Did you have any options other than Butler to attend college, or?
No, absolutely not. I was so small. I weighed 147 pounds as a senior in college. I weighed 100, probably 135 as a senior in high school, and I wasn't going anywhere at all. And I mean, nobody's going to recruit a guy that size. But Pop Hedden, who was an assistant football coach at Butler at the time, he told Joe Deslin, our head coach at Cathedral, he said, that Delahan kid, he's the best running back you got. And he said, we're going to offer him a scholarship. We're going to get him in there. He can play baseball, too. Anyway, so Tony Hinkle was my head coach in Butler. And Pop Hedden convinced Tony Hinkle that he ought to make it possible for me to go to Butler to play football. And that's what it came about. I was just so blessed that they saw something in me. But I could run. I was quick. And I could make people miss. I wasn't very physical. But I went to Butler and was fortunate enough to get to play.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's an awesome story. Tony Hinkle.
He was our head football coach. He was the head basketball coach at Butler, and he was the head baseball coach.
Oh, wow.
All three sports.
What's the best advice or coaching piece of advice that he gave you? I mean, obviously, he was your head football coach and baseball coach then.
Well, Tony Hinkle was very, very simple. Keep it simple. Don't overcoach. Everything we did was very, very simple. And blocking and tackling was the most important part. And the kicking game was also important. Tony Hinkle taught all of us that it doesn't have to be complicated in order to be successful. Doing things right makes up for a lot of problems and a lot of ills. If you do things right, good things will happen to you.
I love that. What would you say are some of your favorite memories from college football and baseball?
Oh, there's a lot of memories, particularly in football. I'm going to tell you two of them. The first one was I was a sophomore, and I had been elevated to starter as a running back because of an injury to an older player, a gentleman named Mike McGinley, who was also a Cathedral High School graduate. Mike McGinley had gotten injured in like the second ball game of the year. And I had caught the coach's eye because I could return punts and return kickoffs and was fairly quick and fairly difficult to tackle in the open field. And I'll never forget, I went to the dress list before my first ball game. Butler was playing Morehead State in Morehead, Kentucky. We were flying to the game. I mean, I had never even entertained the thought of being on an airplane.
Yeah.
There was no way. And I practiced on Friday. We finished practice and I went to the dress list and I looked and I saw my name on the dress list and I just went crazy. I was so excited and so fired up. Because obviously everybody wasn't going to get to go. If we took 50 players, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Anyway, I rushed to the telephone, and I called my father, and I got a hold of him at work, and I said, Dad, I get to dress for the game. I'm going to get to fly in an airplane. I'll never forget it. And, and, of course, he was excited for me and so on and so forth. And I get to the game on the airplane. I'm still only 140 pounds. And I'm so excited. And I got to play in the game. They let me return kicks. And I made one or two really good kick returns. I'll never forget it. And from then on, they kind of gave me opportunities to play a little bit here and there. Well, then fast forward to the third game of the year. And Mike McGinley had gotten injured. I got to play right halfback. I'm scared to death, and we're playing Ball State. And Ball State is not much bigger than Butler at the time, and so they were on our schedule every year. Anyway, so big offensive guard by the name of Lee Grimm. He was our best player. He was a linebacker on defense, and he was really, really good. And he was physical as he could be and strong and tough and about 230 pounds, 6'1". And I go in the game, and I'm of course, right halfback, and they call 27 power, and that was an off-tackle run to the left, and Lee Grimm was the right guard, and he was going to pull, and he looked at me, and he said, get on my ass, you little bastard, we're going to the goal line, and I was so scared, And I wasn't going to do anything he did. He told me to get on his butt. I'm going to get on his butt. And I took off with the ball, and I reached out, and I could touch his rear end because he was pulling to the left.
Yeah.
And as he turned upfield, he forearmed the linebacker and knocked him out of the way. And I'm still on his rear end. And then he goes right for the free safety, and he's heading for the free safety. The free safety doesn't want to get blasted. So he moves out of the way, basically. As he moved to the right, I cut to the left and took off, and we scored. I scored from about 55 yards out or something. I don't know. All I know is Lee Grimm looked at me, and I told you, you little sucker. That's the way it's going to be all day. And, I mean, it was just, it was so much fun, and it was so exciting, and it was, I mean, it instilled my love for football. And I never lost it after that. And, of course, I got to play a lot that year, and then started my junior year and senior year as a running back. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience to play at Butler. And then my senior year on the last football game of the year, never forget this one. We were down 20-0 in the third quarter to Western Kentucky. And all of a sudden we mount a drive and we score, and then we intercept a pass, and we score again, and time is wasting in the fourth quarter, and finally we score again, and now it's 20-20. There's only like 3 minutes to go in the game. I'll never forget this, because Joe Parrica, who was journey brother of Joe Deslin at Butler, Joe Deslin was our center, Joe Parrica was our quarterback, and this is my senior year, and Joe's the holder, and I'm the place kicker. The score's 20-20. And I looked at Joe and I said, Joe, if I hit this extra point, we're going to beat these guys. And he said, don't miss it, sucker. So I line up to kick the extra point, and I shank it to the left.
Oh.
Fortunately, we kicked off to them, and they tried to throw another pass, and we intercepted, and we took it down and scored again and beat them 26-20. And I'll never forget it. They bailed me out from being the GOAT, because we could have won the game with me kicking the extra point, but I choked and missed the extra point. But I had some tremendous experiences. Bill Sylvester, who actually coached your grandfather, and he was my coach. He was my running backs coach there at Butler. He's still alive, and I have so much respect for him, because he treated the players so well and taught us so many things, and taught us the simple things about the game if you just do things right. So I had a lot of fond memories from Butler. I was a member of the Lambda Chi Alpha fraternity. I was the Rush chairman as a sophomore. Then I was the president of the house my junior year. I'll never forget that. That so many things about relationships and guys who taught me stuff while I was in college. Jim Barr was the secretary of the fraternity, and he was my roommate at the fraternity house, and he told me, he said, I want you to run for president of the house because you can win. He said, I'll be your treasurer. He said, I'll take care of you and I'll help you and so on and so forth. He was a year older than me, and it worked perfect. I just learned so many things from that guy.
Mm-hmm. So what was your major in college?
Business education. After my success in football as a freshman and sophomore, mostly as a sophomore, I finally decided, I said, you know what? I said, I love playing. I love football. I love athletics. I said, I think I could be a coach. And if I'm not any good at being a coach, I could still have a business degree, and I could maybe sell insurance like my dad finally wound up doing. My dad started out as an assistant branch accountant for the Kroger Company, but he lost his job because he refused to fire one of his best employees, but the management told him he had to fire her, and he said, I'm not firing her, you got to fire her, and so they fired my dad too. So anyway, my father lost his job with the Kroger Company and became an insurance salesman after that. I thought, well, if I can't be a coach and a teacher, at least I could teach business subjects. My baseball coach, Tom O'Brien, was a business teacher. He taught keyboarding, typing, back when we had the manual typewriters and pushing the keys and all that. Well, anyway, I wound up teaching keyboarding after I graduated from Butler. And I taught keyboarding two classes a day. I taught advanced physical education the other two classes a day at Ben Davis. But I wound up teaching keyboarding for 20 years at Ben Davis High School. And that was basically what I prepared to do in college as a business education major.
Mm-hmm. Where was your first job then, out of college?
Indianapolis Chittard. Oh. Father James P. Higgins, the former principal at Cathedral, who now was the superintendent, or I'm not sure if he was the principal, but he was the boss at Chittard. He had told me when I was a sophomore in college, he said, when you graduate, what are you going to do? I said, well, I think I'm going to be a teacher and coach. He said, you come and see me when you graduate, and I'll have a job for you. In May of my senior year in college at Butler, I went to see Father Higgins, and I said, you promised me I could get a job. He said, you're hired. And so he gave me a job as I taught six business education classes and coached three sports, football, wrestling, and baseball. And I had Carol Perica was my mentor head coach at Chittard. And then Dave Alexander, who recently passed away. Dave Alexander was the head baseball coach. And Carol taught me how to teach how to coach football and wrestling. And then Dave taught me how to coach baseball. And they were both excellent mentors. And they were great, especially Carol was great at relation with the players. Just getting the players to have fun, getting the players to believe in each other and to work hard together and to be unselfish. I just learned so much from those guys. Chittard was a blessing for me. I was 3 years as an assistant to those two gentlemen. And then Carol left and went to Indiana State University to coach football. And he told Father Higgins and the principal, Father Gettelfinger, he told him to hire me as the head coach to replace him. So here I am at 25 years old, and I'm the head football and head wrestling coach. And I gave up baseball at that point. So for the next 4 years, I was the head football coach and head wrestling coach at Chittard. And I loved it. And your grandfather, Bill Lynch, was my first quarterback, and we won 27 games and only lost three during the 3 years that he was my starting quarterback.
So he was the quarterback your first year as a head coach?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
He was a sophomore. He had been on the freshman football team the year before, obviously, and I had been an assistant to Carol, and we had a really good team. We went 10-0 Carol's last year, and then Carol went to Indiana State, and I became the head coach, and your grandfather, Bill Lynch, was our starting quarterback for the next 3 years. We didn't have any playoffs, but we played 10 games, and 10 games each year. I believe we lost two the first year, one the next year, and none the last year.
Wow.
That your grandfather was there.
Wow. So wait, could you please go through the timeline of your coaching career, like each place you've coached and how you ended up there?
Well, I was there at Chittard for seven. I left after 3 years as the head coach at Chittard. The reason I left is because I was offered the head football coaching job at Carmel. It meant a 40% increase in pay.
Oh, wow.
I think I went from $9,500 a year to $14,500 by moving to Carmel. And I became the Carmel head coach. And for the next 7 years, I was at Carmel. At Chittard, because Kevin Shine was the last quarterback that I had after Bill had gone on to Butler.
Mm-hmm.
But we went 35-5 during those 4 years that I was the head coach at Chittard. And then I left and went to Carmel, and we were state runner-up in 75, state champions in 78, and we won like 67 games and lost 12.
Oh, wow.
And so I left Carmel because I was offered an assistant football job at Purdue University with Jim Young, and he really was going away and going to college football. Was like getting a master's degree or a doctor's degree in football, because they do things, they don't do any teaching there, they only coach football.
Mm-hmm.
And so you learn the game, and for the next 4 years I coached under Jim Young, three at Purdue and one at the United States Military Academy. My last year in college football was 1983. 80, 81, and 82, I was at Purdue under Jim Young as the receivers coach.
Okay.
In 84, I went to the United States Military Academy at West Point, Army football, and I was the offensive coordinator for Jim Young. He taught me so much football and so much about structure and organization of a program and how to handle assistant coaches and how to develop a list of responsibilities for each coach. So each coach was responsible for certain areas of the program. We had 8 assistants at that level, of course. And so I used the principles. After 4 years in college football, I said, you know what? Dick Delahan belongs in high school. I was raising my family at that time. I had 2 children, my son Jeff and my daughter Sean. And Jeff and Sean were getting older, and Sean was going to go into high school, and Jeff was about a 5th grader. And I realized that I didn't have a lot of time to be with my family at home. And so I decided that college football, I'd done it for 4 years. I'd learned a lot. And I thought, I want to be a head coach again. You see, you remember, I was 4 years as a head coach at Chittard. And then I was 7 years as a head coach at Carmel. Mm-hmm. And then I went to college football. Mm-hmm. So going back to high school, I had learned what it was like to be an assistant, what it was like to be a head coach at those 2 high schools. And then I went to college and learned how a big-time head football coach operates his program. And so I knew that if I went back to high school, I thought I could do it very, very well. I thought I had a plan. I thought I had learned so much. And the Ben Davis job was open. 1984, I went to Ben Davis, and I coached 20 years at Ben Davis. And in 1974, J.R. Bishop was one of my opponents while we were at Chittard, while we were at Carmel. When we were at Carmel, Carmel and Lawrence Central were playing each other. J.R. Bishop was the head coach at Lawrence Central. And we were playing each other, and we had a great rivalry, many, many great games. And J.R. said to me one summer, he said, listen, so why don't you come and be a guest speaker at this football camp? I'm going to start a football camp. We had 22 kids at the camp, 1974. Mm-hmm. I spoke for 45 minutes to the receivers, 45 minutes to the quarterbacks, and J.R. Bishop paid me $50 to do that. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is terrific. I don't know if we're going to make any money at this, but I know this. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to learn a lot of football. And we are going to make our teams better because our players are going to go to this camp and they're going to learn fundamentals and techniques in the off season. And you actually couldn't coach your own kids back in the day like that.
Really?
And so, no, you weren't allowed to. You weren't allowed to work with your own players like you could work with like 2 players at once and coach them. But you could never put a group together or anything like that. So anyway, long story short, the camp started in 1974, and we just, it took off. And our players got better, the teams in our area got better, and the teams across the state started sending us players in the summertime for the camp, and everybody's players got better, and I think football in Indiana got better. So it was a blessing, and I loved it. I mean, at Ben Davis, I had tremendous bosses. I had tremendous leaders. You know, in all the jobs I ever had, all the way from Chittard to Carmel to Purdue to Army and to Ben Davis, I never had what I considered to be a bad boss. The superintendents, the principals, the athletic directors at all those places were outstanding leaders and directors of the program, and they let me do what I wanted to do, and it was a marriage made in heaven. I had a blessed career because of all these people that I was working with who were, they were just outstanding, and they let me coach, they let me have fun. Some people had to work for a living. I got to coach football, and that's the truth.
Yeah. So you clearly were a very successful coach. You had 9 undefeated seasons, 8 state titles, 3 state runner-up finishes, and you were 1991 National Coach of the Year, right?
That is true.
So what would you say is the key to your success?
Well, number one, being at the right place at the right time. And timing is a lot because every place I went, they really, really wanted to win. Every place I went, I had good bosses and good mentors. Good athletic directors, Joe Harmon, Bill Shepard, Carmel. I had all kinds of good mentors. And honestly, I just realized that I've always been a hard worker. I've always been a guy who gets consumed with his job. I've always been the kind of person who dives into it, and I'm very emotional, and I'm very, very driven to have fun. Mm-hmm. And having fun, to me, is watching players show you how much they've learned and by their play. And they're wanting to please you and show you how valuable their coaching was to you. And that inspired me. I just love to watch a player have a smile on his face because he's pleased with himself, because he had just done something special. And emotion and jumping up and down and getting excited and hugging each other and chesting each other. And Friday nights are really fun.
Mm-hmm. What would you say coaching taught you?
Well, it taught me to try to share the accolades, share the fun, share the recognition. Give the players a lot of credit. Help them to see how important it is that they do things right, that winning is a byproduct of doing things right. And I always used to preach to all these kids, I'd say to them, you guys need to understand and need to learn that it's not what you get for playing, it's what you become because you did it. It's not what you get for playing, it's not the rewards, it's not the accolades, it's not that, it's what you become because you did it. You worked, you waded through the difficult times, you handled the defeats, you got back up off the ground when you got knocked down, and you went back in there and you tried harder and you worked harder. And honestly, I loved the lessons that could be learned in athletics.
Mm-hmm. Who did you look up to as a coach?
Well, I looked up to Tom O'Brien, my baseball coach, when I was in high school, because of the way he treated me and the way he treated the other players and the way he inspired the other players to chase excellence and to not dwell on failure, to forget it and drive on. I really appreciated him. I appreciated Carol Parrica because he was the first head coach that I worked for in football. And Carol taught me so much about how to treat players, how to get the most out of your players. And literally, he would love them. He would love them into submission so that they would just hang on his every word and they wanted to play hard for him and they believed in him and he never doubted their abilities. He was outstanding. And then when I went to Purdue, I learned so much from Jim Young about organization and structure of the program and responsibility. Spread the responsibility out. Don't try to do it all yourself. You know, let your assistant coaches coach and give them credit for their coaching. And it's not all about you. It's about your players and it's about your coaching staff. I learned so much from those people that I was associated with, and I loved my principals. I had great principals all the way through. I had Father Gerald Gettelfinger. I had Jim Schott at Chittard. I had Steve Noon. And I had Dale Graham at Carmel. I had Dr. Jim Mifflin at Ben Davis, Bill Shepard at Carmel. Pappy Joe Harmon at Chittard was our athletic director, and he used to say, "You got to settle down, Dick. You're a little bit too rambunctious. You got to kind of back off a little bit. Sometimes you got to just be a little more quiet," and so forth. I mean, I learned so much from so many of these guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just great mentors.
Mm-hmm. You kind of talked about how you believe that your camp kind of changed football in Indiana, and that's kind of correct. There weren't any state playoffs before your camp, correct?
Correct.
So could you maybe explain / talk about how those changes occurred during your time?
You know, I don't really think that I had that much to do with the state playoffs coming into existence. I think it was Hub Etchison from Richmond, Bob Springer from Washington High School, Joe Deslin from Cathedral. there was a guy by the name of Tom Sells, who was the head coach at Bloomington South High School, or Bloomington High School at the time. And all those guys, Dave Land, he was involved there, and Bob Williams from the Indianapolis Star. These people were pushing the IHSAA to have a state football playoff. And the only thing I could say is about our football camp is I think our players got better. And when our players got better, we got more attention from collegiate level coaches, and more of our players began to get recruited. And so, you know, our players got better. And then when your players get better, your teams get better. And then the state football playoff and the Indianapolis Colts came to Indianapolis, and that also helped to emphasize football. Mm-hmm. And it helped football to get better. And between those things, football, our camp, the Colts, those early mentors of the Indiana Football Coaches Association, Ted Huber was a great guy in the Coaches Association. There was just so many guys that helped to bring about the state football playoffs, and obviously they're really good and very, very well run. The mentors with the IHSAA have done a great job of bringing football along.
Mm-hmm. When did your famous I Love Football chant start?
Oh, boy. I'm not sure I remember exactly. I know we had to warm up the players, and I thought, well, way back at Butler, we did jumping jacks, and we emphasize doing perfect jumping jacks, spreading your feet wide, clapping your hands above your head. And we just developed this chant that started out the first time your hands touched at the top, you would say I, and then the third time you'd say love, and then the fifth time you'd say foot, and then the seventh time you'd say ball. And then we just built on that. It was kind of a military way of doing it because we didn't jump and jack very much or very long, but it was, I love football, I love football, I love football, and then we break down.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where I figured it out or something, but I just thought it was apropos. It fit the situation, it fit the game, it fit the enthusiasm. We kind of got started right. I'd hold them in their down stance, and I'd talk to them and make them stay down and listen, and I'd say, are you ready? And they'd say, yes, sir. And then I'd say, ready, and they'd clap two or three times and whatever I told them. It was a means to start the practice off correctly. Mm-hmm. Trying to do things in a perfect manner. Yeah. And I believe that perfect execution was the secret to success in our game, and we might as well start practice with a perfect set of jumping jacks. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of what it was.
So, I mean, you started this chant, I love football, so why do you love football?
Oh, because of all the things it taught me, because of all the things that I had success with it. I just had so much fun. It gave me a strong belief in myself, and I think confidence grows and rubs off on others, and your players get more confident the more you praise them, the more you know, they want to please you, and you just have to make the demands strong enough that they chase excellence. You achieve perfection when you chase excellence. And these kids really, they work hard and they deserve to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Transitioning away from coaching, how did you meet your wife?
Okay, my wife was a senior at St. Mary's High School, which was an all-girls school in downtown Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. My school, Cathedral, was at 14th and Meridian. The cheerleaders for Cathedral were chosen from St. Mary's, and St. Agnes Academy was right next door to our school, and St. Mary's was about 8 or 10 blocks away in downtown Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Well, my wife had been a cheerleader as a junior for Cathedral, and then she was a cheerleader again as a senior. Well, I had met her because she was a cheerleader and I was a junior playing football. I don't even remember exactly where I met her, but we kind of were friends. We weren't dating or anything, but we never saw each other much except during football season and basketball season. But anyway, one time I said to her, I asked her if she would fix me up with this other girl who was a classmate of hers. And she went to the girl and asked her if she wanted to go out with me. And I said, and she said, no, I don't want to go out with him. He's too straight. So I didn't know what the hell that meant. But anyway, I said to my wife, Antoinette, I said, well, then why don't you go out with me? And she said, okay. And so I picked her up after cheerleading practice one Sunday night in the preseason. It was like, I don't know, it was probably August, in first few days in August. So I picked her up. My dad let me use the family car, a big station wagon, and an old woody wagon with those funny looking wood sides on it. And I drove down. I finally got my driver's license when I was finally 17. I was 17 in July, so this was probably August, and I'd only had my license for a week or so.
Oh, wow.
And I picked her up after cheerleading. We went down to the Teepee restaurant down on, in the south side of Indianapolis, and we got a Coke, and we didn't have any money to speak of. And then I just took her home, and she kissed me goodnight.
Oh.
I've been in love ever since. And anyway, we went together while I was in college. We broke up two or three times. Broke up once when I was in high school. The rest of my senior year, we dated a little bit. Of course, I didn't have any money and didn't have any opportunity to date much. Didn't have a car. So we didn't date a whole lot back in the day there.
Yeah.
But we dated through college, but she didn't go to college. She was working in downtown Indianapolis. We broke up two or three, four times while I was in college. And just her senior year, or my senior year, she was working downtown Indianapolis. Then she left and went to Washington, D.C. and worked for Birch Bayh in the attorney general's office there, or he was a congressman at the time. Anyway, my senior year in college, we decided to get married in May. We've been married for 54 years now.
Oh, wow. What would you say is the key to a successful marriage? You've obviously been married for a long time.
Well, sarcastically, my wife wouldn't agree with this because she always says, that's not right. You're just placating me. But I say, the way you stay married for 54 years is you say yes, dear. If you say yes, dear, it always works because, you know, mom's right most of the time. And so, if you just say yes, dear, you don't have as many arguments.
Yeah.
And things go much more smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a woman's world, to be honest with you. And the men, you know, they just let us live in it. And it's the truth. We do what they allow us to get away with in terms of, you know, free time and not, I mean, things like going to Goodwill and stuff like that, and shopping and all that stuff. That doesn't appeal to most men.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And ladies like to go shopping, most of them. So,
yeah.
It's just, you got to treat each other as you would like to be treated. And if you do that, you got a chance to keep the same mate.
Mm-hmm. Happy wife, happy life.
No question.
You have two kids. How old were you when you had your first child?
I was 24, and my second child was 28. At 28.
Okay.
My first child was my daughter Sean, and Sean is now 52, and she's currently on a trip by herself to Italy.
Oh, wow.
And she's there for about 48 days, something like that, and she's just traveling. Her children, they're all either in college or working at this time, and she decided that she's no longer married, so she decided to have this trip. And my son, Jeff, is a fireman with the city of Lawrence in Lawrence Township.
Do you have any funny parenting stories from when they were little?
Oh, boy. Not really. My son, Jeff, my assistant coaches all used to come to my house on Sundays. And we'd have staff meetings on Sundays at my house. My wife would cook breakfast for us on Sunday mornings. And then we'd be watching film and stuff and talking and having this meeting. And they'd take my son, Jeff, who was only about four at the time, and they'd hold a pillow up and he'd run at the pillow and tackle the pillow and usually hit his head on the furniture and all kinds of stuff. And they used to have fun with him. And he turned out to be an offensive center and a nose guard for me at Ben Davis later on. And he was an all-state football player. And he and I were on the same team, of course, for the state championship game in 1990 when he was a senior. And we were on the field at the Hoosier Dome Stadium and won the state championship. And he and I were embracing in the middle of the field. And that was pretty special.
Oh.
So that was his senior year. So we had some great times. And my daughter, of course, was a cheerleader for Ben Davis. And my senior night with my daughter was really super. And when she got married, I remember she and I dancing at her wedding. And all I could do was cry.
Oh.
I was so keyed up and so happy for her. And I just cried like crazy. I couldn't even stop crying while we were dancing.
Oh, that's great. What would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Well, I think it's seeing them be successful. Seeing them go through the rigors of being a young person. I used to tell the players, and I told my son and my daughter, you've got to find and conquer yourself, because sometimes you are your own worst enemy. You know, a lot of times kids say too much. They get down on themselves. They doubt themselves. And helping your children to find and conquer themselves is very rewarding. When you see them show maturity and when you see them make positive decisions for their future, and it's very rewarding for me as their father. For example, my daughter is writing a blog right now, and she's writing a book. She's on like chapter 17 or something, writing a book. And she's a very, very good writer, and she graduated from Butler in 3 years in mathematics and was president of the student body.
Oh, wow.
In her senior year at Butler, or her junior year, because she graduated in 3 years at Butler. And she just was so very, very capable. She's so very, very successful now. She's an attorney, and she has a degree from IU Law School, and she's been a manager of a catering company, and she's just taking a sabbatical, stopping working for about 5 months, and taking this trip, and she's just accomplished so many things. And my son has been a great fireman for the city of Lawrence for 15 years. You know, seeing your children grow up with correct values and the correct decisions that they have made, that's the joy of being a parent.
What parenting advice would you give to parents now?
Well, it's a very difficult time because technology has changed so much of what's going on. And I'm not very good at technology, and I'm not very good at handling, you know, some of the difficulties. It's really, I don't think people should be in everybody else's business like they are.
Yeah.
You know, I think social media is, people spread too much of their own private lives on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, I don't want to get into a political discussion, but I just don't think that social media and the media in general is doing our country a service. I really don't. I think there's too much false media. There's too much falsehoods. And people are not as honest as they need to be. Honesty is kind of gone by the wayside. For example, I believe that every person who runs for office should be running for office so that they can help this country get better. I just think that's so very, very important. It's not what the country can do for you. It's what you can do for our country. How can you help our country get better and solve some of the issues that we have in our country?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think many times I don't think the politicians are in it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So it's very sad, but I think parents, it's difficult to be a parent in this day and age because so much is demanded of you to be a parent. I mean, it costs a lot of money to raise a family. Mm-hmm. And we got mom working, and my wife has not actually worked outside the home except for a bridal shop she ran during my early years as a coach. She had a bridal shop that she ran, but as soon as we had two children, she wasn't able to do that, and so she just raised the kids. Well, there aren't very many families where the wife can afford to just raise the kids. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's difficult, very difficult.
What would the you of today tell yourself as a young husband and father?
Well, I would try to be more organized in the respect that I would try to be a little faster at my job, because I've always been a detail person, and sometimes I dwell in my job on things that were probably not necessary, but I thought they were necessary, and I would narrow down and make it more efficient so that I could spend more quality time with my kids and with my wife.
How many grandkids do you have?
I have 8, and 2 of them are great, meaning they're great-grandchildren.
Oh, okay. What's your favorite part about being a grandpa?
It's to see them smile and see them happy and see them, you know, run up to you and hug you. And I just, I love being proud of them. I love them chasing excellence, chasing perfection to achieve excellence. My grandkids are all pretty darn good students, and it gives me great pleasure to see them work so hard at trying to be really special, and they want to be special in my eyes, and that's fun to see them chase that excellence.
Mm-hmm. So as you look back on your life, who were the people who had the greatest impact on you or influenced you the most?
Well, I would say Tom O'Brien, my mother, my father, Carol Parica, Jim Young at Purdue, the head coach that I worked for 3 of the 4 years in college football, Dr. Jim Mifflin, the principal, Dale Graham, the principal at Carmel, Dr. Jim Mifflin, the principal at Ben Davis, Bob Britt, the athletic director at Ben Davis, Bill Shepard, the athletic director at Carmel, Joe Harmon, the athletic director at Chittard. All those people influenced me very positively. Father Jim Higgins, who gave me my first job, and he was the principal at Chittard when I worked there, and he was the principal at Cathedral High School when I went there. I've had so many people, because I'm really a very observant person. I evaluate people, and the ones that really impress me, I really pay attention and learn from them and remember the lessons that they taught me.
Would you say that you have a favorite memory or time period of your life?
Oh boy, probably when my daughter and my son were in high school, and the state championship experiences that we had when my son was there, and then how proud I was of my daughter. She graduated about 10th in her class at Ben Davis. It was many times very gratifying to me to see, you know, my daughter graduate from college in 3 years. And my son, you know, he went to college, but he didn't. It really wasn't for him, and he told me, he said, Dad, I'm going to do something different, and he did it, and he's done it, and he's got 2 wonderful children. He's done a good job of being a father, mm-hmm. And those things are, you know, when you go to your grave, I just have no regrets, and that's the truth. I don't have any regrets. I maybe would have done a few things differently, but I've been so blessed, not only with my children, but my wife has allowed me to chase my dream of, you know, being a head football coach, and just spent my life raising other people's children. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth.
Yeah. What advice would you give to my generation?
Do not cut corners. Pay attention to details. Pay attention to the fundamentals. The fundamentals of being an employee. The fundamentals are to be there and be on time and don't cut corners. And winning in the game of life is a byproduct of doing things right. If you do things right, good things will happen to you. Life is sometimes not nearly as hard as we make it. We just have to remember to do things right. Think about what would your mother want you to do? My mother was a saint. She always did what was best for our family. And she was a tremendous mentor and so kind. And seldom did she have an unkind word to say about anybody. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I lived up to that, but she has just been an inspiration.
What do you believe is the most important thing in life?
Hard work and disciplined hard work over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. If you get knocked down, if you get fired, if you lose your job, if something goes bad, pick yourself up and go get a better job and do a better job the next time. Learn from it. When you fall down and we fail in this life, while you're down there, pick up something and get on to the next endeavor or the next opportunity.
And then finally, what do you hope to be remembered by?
Do I hope to be remembered by? Well, that I treated my fellow man with respect and that I helped when I could. I helped when the opportunity came to me. I helped my fellow man, and they speak kindly of me.
Dick Delahan, the man who has approached each phase and task that life has brought him with a zest so contagious that it rubs off on all those he's around, emphasizing the importance of doing things right and hard work no matter what. Dick Delahan spent all 76 years of his life chasing excellence, and although he definitely has had his success along the way, he knows that it's not about the recognition he has gained, but about who he's become because he did. The man who loves the game, loves life, and loves people, helping his fellow man whenever he can.
Number of things. Get up and eat breakfast, and some days I play golf, some days I work out, some days I go on a bike ride, some days I pull the weeds in the flower beds, you know, help my wife in anything that she happens to need me to do, you know, spend a little time on emails from friends and former players, former coaches, you know, that type of thing. I'm usually moving quite a bit. Okay, honey. Right. Good luck, and call me back if I can help you any other time.
All right, perfect. Thank you. Have a good rest of your night.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.